Vasha caught the messenger up in the air and printed a long, enthusiastic kiss on his lips, which were very much like Lizanka's. "Kiss him, Arkady," he said, handing Petya to him, and without touching the ground, the boy was transferred to Arkady Ivanovich's powerful and eager arms. "Will you have some breakfast, dear?"
"Thank you very much. We have had it already. We got up early today. The others have gone to church. Sister was 2 hours curling my hair and pomading it, washing me and mending my trousers, for I tore them yesterday playing with Sashka in the street. We were snowballing."
"Well, well, well."
"So she dressed me up to come and see you, and then pomaded my head, and then gave me a regular kissing. She said, 'Go to Vasha, wish him a happy new year, and ask whether they are happy, whether they had a good night, and—'
"To ask you something else."
"Oh, yes, whether you had finished the work you spoke of yesterday, when you were there."
"Oh, I've got it all written down," said the boy, reading from a slip of paper which he took out of his pocket.
"Yes, they were uneasy."
"It will be finished. It will be. Tell her that it will be. I shall finish it, on my word of honour."
"And something else."
"Oh, yes, I forgot. Sister sent a little note and a present, and I was forgetting it."
"My goodness. Oh, you little darling, where is it? Where is it? That's it. Oh, look, brother. See what she writes. The darling, the precious.
You know, I saw there yesterday a paper case for me. It's not finished, so she says, 'I am sending you a lock of my hair, and the other will come later.' Look, brother, look." And overwhelmed with rapture, he showed Arkady Ivanovich a curl of luxuriant jet-black hair. Then he kissed it fervently and put it in his breast pocket nearest his heart.
"Vasha, I shall get you a locket for that curl," Arkady Ivanovich said resolutely at last.
"And we are going to have hot veal, and tomorrow brains. Mama wants to make cakes, but we are not going to have millet porridge," said the boy, after a moment's thought, to wind up his budget of interesting items.
"Oh, what a pretty boy," cried Arkady Ivanovich. "Vasha, you are the happiest of mortals."
The boy finished his tea, took from Vasha a note, 1,000 kisses, and went out, happy and frolicsome as before.
"Well, brother," began Arkady Ivanovich, highly delighted, "you see how splendid it all is. You see, everything is going well. Don't be downcast. Don't be uneasy. Go ahead, get it done, Vasha. Get it done. I'll be home at 2 o'clock. I'll go round to them, and then to Yulian Mastakovich.
Well, goodbye, brother. Goodbye. Oh, if only—"
"Very good. You go. Very good," said Vasha.
"Then I really won't go to Yulian Mastakovich.
Goodbye."
"Stay, brother. Stay. Tell them, well, whatever you think fit. Kiss her, and give me a full account of everything afterwards."
"Come, come, of course. I know all about it. This happiness has upset you, the suddenness of it all. You've not been yourself since yesterday. You have not got over the excitement of yesterday. Well, it's settled. Now try and get over it, Vasha. Goodbye. Goodbye."
At last the friends parted. All the morning Arkady Ivanovich was preoccupied and could think of nothing but Vasha. He knew his weak, highly nervous character.
"Yes, this happiness has upset him. I was right there," he said to himself. "Upon my word, he has made me quite depressed too. That man will make a tragedy of anything. What a feverish creature. Oh, I must save him. I must save him," said Arkady, not noticing that he himself was exaggerating into something serious, a slight trouble, in reality quite trivial.
Only at 11 o'clock he reached the porter's lodge of Yulian Mastakovich's house to add his modest name to the long list of illustrious people who had written their names on a sheet of blotted and scribbled paper in the porter's lodge.
What was his surprise when he saw, just above his own, the signature of Vasha Shumkov? It amazed him. What's the matter with him? He thought. Arkady Ivanovich, who had just been so buoyant with hope, came out feeling upset. There was certainly going to be trouble. But how? And in what form? He reached the Artemyevs with gloomy forebodings. He seemed absent-minded from the first, and after talking a little with Lizanka, went away with tears in his eyes. He was really anxious about Vasha. He went home running, and on the Neva came full tilt upon Vasha himself. The latter, too, was uneasy. "Where are you going?" cried Arkady Ivanovich. Vasha stopped, as though he had been caught in a crime. "Oh, it's nothing, brother. I wanted to go for a walk." "You could not stand it, and have been to the Artemyevs." "Oh, Vasha, Vasha, why did you go to Yulian Mastakovich?" Vasha did not answer, but then, with a wave of his hand, he said, "Arkady, I don't know what is the matter with me. Come, come, Vasha. I know what it is. Calm yourself. You've been excited and overwrought ever since yesterday. Only think, it's not much to bear. Everybody's fond of you. Everybody's ready to do anything for you. Your work is getting on all right. You will get it done. You will certainly get it done. I know that you have been imagining something. You have had apprehensions about something. No, it's all right. It's all right. Do you remember, Vasha? Do you remember when it was the same with you once before? Do you remember when you got your promotion? In your joy and thankfulness, you were so zealous that you spoilt all your work for a week. It is just the same with you now." "Yes, yes, Arkady. But now it is different. It is not that at all." "How is it different? And very likely the work is not urgent at all, while you are killing yourself." "It's nothing. It's nothing. I'm all right. It's nothing. Well, come along." "Why, are you going home and not to them?" "Yes, brother. How could I have the face to turn up there? I have changed my mind. It was only that I could not stay on alone without you. Now you are coming back with me. I'll sit down to write again. Let us go." They walked along, and for some time were silent. Vasha was in haste. "Why don't you ask me about them?" said Arkady Ivanovich.
"Oh, yes. Well, Arkasha, what about them?"
"Vasha, you are not like yourself."
"Oh, I'm all right. I'm all right. Tell me everything, Arkasha,"
said Vasha in an imploring voice, as though to avoid further explanations. Arkady Ivanovich sighed. He felt utterly at a loss, looking at Vasha. His account of their friends roused Vasha. He even grew talkative. They had dinner together. Lizanka's mother had filled Arkady Ivanovich's pockets with little cakes, and eating them, the friends grew more cheerful. After dinner, Vasha promised to take a nap, so as to sit up all night. He did, in fact, lie down. In the morning, someone whom it was impossible to refuse had invited Arkady Ivanovich to tea. The friends parted. Arkady promised to come back as soon as he could, by 8 o'clock if possible. The 3 hours of separation seemed to him like 3 years. At last he got away and rushed back to Vasha. When he went into the room, he found it in darkness. Vasha was not at home. He asked Mavra. Mavra said that he had been writing all the time and had not slept at all. Then he had paced up and down the room, and after that, an hour before, he had run out, saying he would be back in half an hour. "And when," says he, "Arkady Ivanovich comes in, tell him, old woman," says he. Mavra told him in conclusion, "that I have gone out for a walk." And he repeated the order 3 or 4 times. "He is at the Artemyevs," thought Arkady Ivanovich, and he shook his head. A minute later, he jumped up with renewed hope.
He has simply finished, he thought. That's all it is. He couldn't wait, but ran off there. But no, he would have waited for me. Let's have a peep what he has there. He lighted a candle and ran to Vasha's writing table. The work had made progress, and it looked as though there were not much left to do. Arkady Ivanovich was about to investigate further when Vasha himself walked in.
"Oh, you are here!" he cried with a start of dismay.
Arkady Ivanovich was silent. He was afraid to question Vasha. The latter dropped his eyes and remained silent too as he began sorting the papers. At last their eyes met. The look in Vasha's was so beseeching, imploring, and broken that Arkady shuddered when he saw it. His heart quivered and was full.
"Vasha, my dear boy, what is it? What's wrong?" he cried, rushing to him and squeezing him in his arms. "Explain to me. I don't understand you and your depression. What is the matter with you, my poor tormented boy? What is it? Tell me all about it without hiding anything. It can't be only this."
Vasha held him tight and could say nothing. He could scarcely breathe.
"Don't, Vasha, don't. Well, if you don't finish it, what then? I don't understand you. Tell me your trouble. You see, it is for your sake. Oh, dear, he said, walking up and down the room and clutching at everything he came across, as though seeking at once some remedy for Vasha. "I will go to Yulian Mastakovich instead of you tomorrow. I will ask him, entreat him to let you have another day. I will explain it all to him. Anything, if it worries you so."
"God forbid!" cried Vasha, and turned as white as the wall. He could scarcely stand on his feet.
"Vasha! Vasha!"
Vasha pulled himself together. His lips were quivering. He tried to say something, but could only convulsively squeeze Arkady's hand in silence. His hand was cold. Arkady stood facing him, full of anxious and miserable suspense. Vasha raised his eyes again.
"Vasha! God bless you, Vasha! You wring my heart, my dear boy, my friend!"
Tears gushed from Vasha's eyes. He flung himself on Arkady's bosom.
"I have deceived you, Arkady," he said. "I have deceived you. Forgive me. Forgive me. I have been faithless to your friendship."
"What is it, Vasha? What is the matter?" asked Arkady in real alarm.
"Look!"
And with a gesture of despair, Vasha tossed out of the drawer onto the table 6 thick manuscripts similar to the one he had copied.
"What's this? What I have to get through by the day after tomorrow. I haven't done a quarter. Don't ask me. Don't ask me how it has happened," Vasha went on, speaking at once of what was distressing him so terribly. "Arkady, dear friend, I don't know myself what came over me. I feel as though I were coming out of a dream. I have wasted 3 weeks doing nothing. I kept going to see her. My heart was aching. I was tormented by the uncertainty. I could not write. I did not even think about it. Only now, when happiness is at hand for me, I have come to my senses."
"Vasha," began Arkady Ivanovich resolutely. "Vasha, I will save you. I understand it all. It's a serious matter. I will save you. Listen, listen to me. I will go to Yulian Mastakovich tomorrow. Don't shake your head. No, listen. I will tell him exactly how it has all been. Let me do that. I will explain to him. I will go into everything. I will tell him how crushed you are, how you are worrying yourself."
"Do you know that you are killing me now?"
Vasha brought out, turning cold with horror. Arkady Ivanovich turned pale, but at once, controlling himself, laughed.
"Is that all? Is that all?" he said. "Upon my word, Vasha, Upon my word, aren't you ashamed? Come, listen. I see that I am grieving you. You see, I understand you. I know what is passing in your heart. Why, we have been living together for 5 years, thank God. You are such a kind, soft-hearted fellow, but weak, unpardonably weak. Why, even Lizaveta Mikhailovna has noticed it. And you are a dreamer, and that's a bad thing, too. You may go from bad to worse, brother. I tell you, I know what you want. You would like Yulian Mastakovich, for instance, to be beside himself, and, maybe, to give a ball, too, from joy, because you are going to get married. Stop, stop, you are frowning. You see that at one word from me, you are offended on Yulian Mastakovich's account. Let him alone. You know I respect him just as much as you do. But argue as you may, you can't prevent my thinking that you would like there to be no one unhappy in the whole world when you are getting married. Yes, brother, you must admit that you would like me, for instance, your best friend, to come in for a fortune of 100,000 all of a sudden. You would like all the enemies in the world to be suddenly, for no rhyme or reason, reconciled, so that in their joy they might all embrace one another in the middle of the street, and then perhaps come here to call on you. Vasya, my dear boy, I am not laughing. It is true. You've said as much to me long ago in different ways. Because you are happy, you want everyone, absolutely everyone, to become happy at once. It hurts you and troubles you to be happy alone. And so you want at once to do your utmost to be worthy of that happiness, and maybe to do some great deed to satisfy your conscience. Oh, I understand how ready you are to distress yourself for having suddenly been remiss just when you ought to have shown your zeal, your capacity. Well, maybe your gratitude, as you say. It is very bitter for you to think that Yulian Mastakovich may frown and even be angry when he sees that you have not justified the expectations he had of you. It hurts you to think that you may hear reproaches from the man you look upon as your benefactor, and at such a moment, when your heart is full of joy and you don't know on whom to lavish your gratitude. Isn't that true? It is, isn't it? Arkady Ivanovich, whose voice was trembling, paused and drew a deep breath. Vasya looked affectionately at his friend. A smile passed over his lips. His face even lighted up, as though with a gleam of hope. "Well, listen then," Arkady Ivanovich began again, growing more hopeful. "There's no necessity that you should forfeit Yulian Mastakovich's favour, is there, dear boy? Is there any question of it?" "And since it is so," said Arkady, jumping up, "I shall sacrifice myself for you. I am going tomorrow to Yulian Mastakovich, and don't oppose me." "You magnify your failure to a crime, Vasya. Yulian Mastakovich is a magnanimous and merciful, and what is more, he is not like you. He will listen to you and me, and get us out of our trouble, brother Vasya. Well, are you calmer?" Vasya pressed his friend's hands with tears in his eyes. "Hush, hush, Arkady," he said. "The thing is settled. I haven't finished so very well. If I haven't finished, I haven't finished, and there's no need for you to go. I will tell him all about it. I will go myself. I am calmer now. I am perfectly calm. Only you mustn't go. But listen." "Vasya, my dear boy," Arkady Ivanovich cried joyfully, "I judged from what you said. I am glad that you have thought better of things and have recovered yourself. But whatever may befall you, whatever happens, I am with you. Remember that. I see that it worries you to think of my speaking to Yulian Mastakovich, and I won't say a word, not a word. You shall tell him yourself. You see? You shall go tomorrow. Oh, no, you had better not go.
You'll go on writing here, you see, and I'll find out about this work, whether it is very urgent or not, whether it must be done by the time or not, and if you don't finish it in time, what will come of it. Then I will run back to you. Do you see? Do you see? There is still hope. Suppose the work is not urgent. It may be all right. Yulian Mastakovich may not remember. Then all is saved. Vasya shook his head doubtfully, but his grateful eyes never left his friend's face.
Come, that's enough. I am so weak, so tired, he said, sighing. I don't want to think about it. Let us talk of something else. I won't write either now. Do you know, I'll only finish 2 short pages just to get to the end of a passage. Listen, I have long wanted to ask you, how is it you know me so well?
Tears dropped from Vasha's eyes on Arkady's hand.
If you knew, Vasha, how fond I am of you, you would not ask that, yes?
Yes, yes, Arkady. I don't know that, because I don't know why you are so fond of me. Yes, Arkady. Do you know, even your love has been killing me. Do you know, ever so many times, particularly when I am thinking of you in bed, for I always think of you when I am falling asleep, I shed tears, and my heart throbs at the thought that you are so fond of me, while I can do nothing to relieve my heart, can do nothing to repay you. You see, Vasya, you see what a fellow you are. Why, how upset you are now, said Arkady, whose heart ached at that moment, and who remembered the scene in the street the day before. Nonsense! You want me to be calm, but I never have been calm and happy. Do you know... Listen, I want to tell you all about it, but I am afraid of wounding you. You keep scolding me and being vexed, and I am afraid. See how I am trembling now! I don't know why. You see, this is what I want to say. I feel as though I had never known myself before. Yes, yes, I only began to understand other people, too, yesterday. I did not feel or appreciate things fully, brother. My heart was hard. Listen how it has happened, that I have never done good to anyone, and anyone in the world, because I couldn't. I am not even pleasant to look at. But everybody does me good. You, to begin with. Do you suppose I don't see that? Only I said nothing. Only I said nothing.
Hush, Vasya.
Oh, Arkasha! It's all right, Vasya interrupted, hardly able to articulate for tears. I talked to you yesterday about Yulian Mastakovich, and you know yourself how stern and severe he is. Even you have come in for a reprimand from him. Yet he deigned to jest with me yesterday, to show his affection and kind-heartedness, which he prudently conceals from everyone. Come, Vasya, that only shows you deserve your good fortune. Oh, Arkasha, how I longed to finish all this! No, I shall ruin my good luck, I feel that. Oh, no, not through that, Vasya added, seeing that Arkady glanced at the heap of urgent work lying on the table. That's nothing. That's only paper covered with writing. It's nonsense. That matter's settled. I went to see them today, Arkasha. I did not go in. I felt depressed and sad. I simply stood at the door. She was playing the piano. I listened. You see, Arkady, he went on, dropping his voice, I did not dare to go in.
I say, Vasya, what is the matter with you? You look at one so strangely.
Oh, it's nothing. I feel a little sick. My legs are trembling. It's because I sat up last night. Yes, everything looks green before my eyes. It's here. Here.
He pointed to his heart. He fainted. When he came to himself, Arkady tried to take forcible measures. He tried to compel him to go to bed. Nothing would induce Vasya to consent. He shed tears, wrung his hands, wanted to write, was absolutely set on finishing his two pages. To avoid exciting him, Arkady let him sit down to the work.
"Do you know," said Vasya, as he settled himself in his place, "an idea has occurred to me. There is hope."
He smiled to Arkady, and his pale face lightened up with a gleam of hope.
"I will take him what is done the day after tomorrow. About the rest I will tell a lie. I will say it has been burnt, that it has been sopped in water, that I have lost it, that, in fact, I have not finished it. I cannot lie. I will explain. Do you know what? I'll explain to him all about it. I will tell him how it was that I could not. I'll tell him about my love. He has got married himself just lately. He'll understand me. I will do it all, of course, respectfully, quietly. He will see my tears and be touched by them."
"Yes, of course you must go. You must go and explain to him. But there's no need of tears. Tears for what? Really, Vasya, you quite scare me."
"Yes, I'll go. I'll go. But now let me write. Let me write, Kasia. I am not interfering with anyone. Let me write."
Arkady flung himself on the bed. He had no confidence in Vasya. No confidence at all. Vasya was capable of anything, but to ask forgiveness for what? How? That was not the point. The point was that Vasya had not carried out his obligations, that Vasya felt guilty in his own eyes, felt that he was ungrateful to destiny, that Vasya was crushed, overwhelmed by happiness, and thought himself unworthy of it, that, in fact, he was simply trying to find an excuse to go off his head on that point, and that he had not recovered from the unexpectedness of what had happened the day before. "That's what it is," thought Arkady Ivanovitch. "I must save him. I must reconcile him to himself. He will be his own ruin." He thought and thought, and resolved to go at once next day to Yulian Mastakovich and to tell him all about it. Vasya was sitting, writing. Arkady Ivanovitch, worn out, lay down to think things over again, and only woke at daybreak.
"Damnation! Again!" he cried, looking at Vasya.
The latter was still sitting, writing. Arkady rushed up to him, seized him, and forcibly put him to bed. Vasya was smiling. His eyes were closing with sleep. He could hardly speak.
"I wanted to go to bed," he said. "Do you know, Arkady, I have an idea. I shall finish. I made my pen go faster. I could not have sat at it any longer. Wake me at 8 o'clock.
Without finishing his sentence, he dropped asleep and slept like the dead. "Mavra," said Arkady Ivanovitch to Mavra, who came in with the tea. "He asked to be waked in an hour. Don't wake him on any account. Let him sleep 10 hours if he can. Do you understand?"
"I understand, sir."
"Don't get the dinner. Don't bring in the wood. Don't make a noise, or it will be the worse for you. If he asks for me, tell him I have gone to the office. Do you understand?"
"I understand. Bless you, sir. Let him sleep and welcome. I am glad my gentlemen should sleep well, and I take good care of their things. And about that cup that was broken, and you blamed me, Your Honour. It wasn't me. It was poor Pussy broke it. I ought to have kept an eye on her."
"Shh, you confounded thing," I said.
"Hush, be quiet. Be quiet."
Arkady Ivanovitch followed Mavra out into the kitchen, asked for the key, and locked her up there. Then he went to the office. On the way, he considered how he could present himself before Yulian Mastakovich, and whether it would be appropriate and not impertinent.
He went into the office timidly, and timidly inquired whether His Excellency were there, receiving the answer that he was not and would not be. Arkady Ivanovitch instantly thought of going to his flat, but reflected very prudently that if Yulian Mastakovich had not come to the office, he would certainly be busy at home. He remained. The hours seemed to him endless. Indirectly, he inquired about the work entrusted to Shumkov, but no one knew anything about this. All that was known was that Yulian Mastakovich did employ him on special jobs, but what they were no one could say. At last, it struck 3 o'clock, and Arkady Ivanovich rushed out, eager to get home. In the vestibule, he was met by a clerk, who told him that Vasily Petrovich Shumkov had come about 1 o'clock, and asked, the clerk added, whether you were here, and whether Yulian Mastakovich had been here. Hearing this, Arkady Ivanovich took a sledge and hastened home, beside himself with alarm. Shumkov was at home. He was walking about the room in violent excitement. Glancing at Arkady Ivanovich, he immediately controlled himself, reflected, and hastened to conceal his emotion. He sat down to his papers without a word. He seemed to avoid his friend's questions, seemed to be bothered by them, to be pondering to himself on some plan and deciding to conceal his decision, because he could not reckon further on his friend's affection. This struck Arkady, and his heart ached with a poignant and oppressive pain. He sat on the bed and began turning over the leaves of some book, the only one he had in his possession, keeping his eye on poor Vasya. But Vasya remained obstinately silent, writing and not raising his head. So passed several hours, and Arkady's misery reached an extreme point. At last, at 11 o'clock, Vasya lifted his head and looked with a fixed, vacant stare at Arkady. Arkady waited. 2 or 3 minutes passed. Vasya did not speak.
"Vasya!" cried Arkady.
Vasya made no answer.
"Vasya!"
he repeated, jumping up from the bed.
"Vasya, what is the matter with you? What is it?"
he cried, running up to him. Vasya raised his eyes and again looked at him with the same vacant, fixed stare.
"He's in a trance,"
thought Arkady, trembling all over with fear. He seized a bottle of water, raised Vasya, poured some water on his head, moistened his temples, rubbed his hands in his own, and Vasya came to himself.
"Vasya! Vasya!"
cried Arkady, unable to restrain his tears.
"Vasya! Save yourself! Rouse yourself! Rouse yourself!"
He could say no more, but held him tight in his arms. A look as of some oppressive sensation passed over Vasya's face. He rubbed his forehead and clutched at his head, as though he were afraid it would burst.
"I don't know what is the matter with me," he added at last. "I feel torn to pieces. Come, it's all right. It's all right. Give over, Arkady, don't grieve,"
he repeated, looking at him with sad, exhausted eyes.
"Why be so anxious? Come." "You comforting me!"
cried Arkady, whose heart was torn.
"Vasya," he said at last, "lie down and have a little nap, won't you? Don't wear yourself out for nothing. You'll be set to work better afterwards."
"Yes, yes," said Vasya. "By all means, I'll lie down. Very good.
Yes, you see, I meant to finish, but now I've changed my mind. Yes."
And Arkady led him to the bed.
"Listen, Vasya," he said firmly. "We must settle this matter finally. Tell me what you were thinking about."
"Oh,"
said Vasya, with a flourish of his weak hand turning over on the other side.
"Come, Vasya, come. Make up your mind. I don't want to hurt you. I can't be silent any longer. You won't sleep until you've made up your mind, I know."
"As you like, as you like," Vasya repeated enigmatically.
"He will give in," thought Arkady Ivanovitch. "Attend to me, Vasya," he said. "Remember what I say, and I will save you tomorrow. Tomorrow I will decide your fate." "What am I saying, your fate? You have so frightened me, Vasya, that I am using your own words. Fate, indeed. It's simply nonsense, rubbish. You don't want to lose Yulian Mastakovich's favour, affection, if you like. No, and you won't lose it. You will see."
Arkady Ivanovitch would have said more, but Vasya interrupted him. He sat up in bed, put both arms around Arkady Ivanovitch's neck and kissed him.
"Enough," he said in a weak voice. "Enough. Say no more about that."
And again he turned his face to the wall.
"My goodness," thought Arkady. "My goodness. What is the matter with him? He is utterly lost. What has he in his mind? He will be his own undoing."
Arkady looked at him in despair.
"If he were to fall ill," thought Arkady, "perhaps it would be better. His trouble would pass off with illness, and that might be the best way of settling the whole business. But what nonsense I am talking! Oh, my God!"
Meanwhile, Vasya seemed to be asleep. Arkady Ivanovitch was relieved.
"A good sign," he thought.
He made up his mind to sit beside him all night, but Vasya was restless. He kept twitching and tossing about on the bed and opening his eyes for an instant. At last, exhaustion got the upper hand. He slept like the dead. It was about 2 o'clock in the morning. Arkady Ivanovitch began to doze in the chair with his elbow on the table. He had a strange and agitated dream. He kept fancying that he was not asleep and that Vasya was still lying on the bed. But strange to say, he fancied that Vasya was pretending, that he was deceiving him, that he was getting up, stealthily watching him out of the corner of his eye, and was stealing up to the writing table. Arkady felt a scalding pain at his heart. He felt vexed and sad and depressed to see Vasya not trusting him, hiding and concealing himself from him. He tried to catch hold of him, to call out, to carry him to the bed. Then Vasya kept shrieking in his arms, and he laid on the bed a lifeless corpse. He opened his eyes and woke up. Vasya was sitting before him at the table, writing. Hardly able to believe his senses, Arkady glanced at the bed. Vasya was not there. Arkady jumped up in a panic, still under the influence of his dream. Vasya did not stir. He went on writing. All at once, Arkady noticed with horror that Vasya was moving a dry pen over the paper, was turning over perfectly blank pages and hurrying to fill up the paper as though he were doing his work in a most thorough and efficient way.
"No, this is not a trance," thought Arkady Ivanovitch, and he trembled all over.
"Vasya! Vasya, speak to me!" he cried, clutching him by the shoulder. But Vasya did not speak. He went on as before, scribbling with a dry pen over the paper.
"At last I have made the pen go faster," he said, without looking up at Arkady.
Arkady seized his hand and snatched away the pen. A moan broke from Vasya. He dropped his hand and raised his eyes to Arkady. Then, with an air of misery and exhaustion, he passed his hand over his forehead, as though he wanted to shake off some leaden weight that was pressing upon his whole being, and slowly, as though lost in thought, he let his head sink on his breast.
"Vasya! Vasya!" cried Arkady in despair. "Vasya!"
A minute later, Vasya looked at him. Tears stood in his large blue eyes, and his pale, mild face wore a look of infinite suffering. He whispered something.
"What? What is it?" cried Arkady,
bending down to him.
"What for? Why are they doing it to me?"
whispered Vasya.
"What for? What have I done?"
"Vasya, what is it? What are you afraid of? What is it?" cried Arkady, wringing his hands in despair.
"Why are they sending me for a soldier?"
said Vasya, looking his friend straight in the face.
"Why is it? What have I done?"
Arkady's hair stood on end with horror. He refused to believe his ears. He stood over him, half dead. A minute later, he pulled himself together. "It's nothing. It's only for the minute," he said to himself, with pale face and blue, quivering lips, and he hastened to put on his outdoor things. He meant to run straight for a doctor. All at once, Vasya called to him. Arkady rushed to him and clasped him in his arms like a mother whose child is being torn from her.
"Arkady, Arkady, don't tell anyone. Don't tell anyone, do you hear? It is my trouble. I must bear it alone."
"What is it? What is it? Rouse yourself, Vasya, rouse yourself!" Vasya sighed, and slow tears trickled down his cheeks.
"Why kill her? How is she to blame?" he muttered in an agonized, heart-rending voice. "The sin is mine! The sin is mine!"
He was silent for a moment.
"Farewell, my love. Farewell, my love," he whispered, shaking his luckless head.
Arkady started, pulled himself together, and would have rushed for the doctor.
"Let us go. It is time," cried Vasya,
carried away by Arkady's last movement.
"Let us go, brother. Let us go. I am ready. You lead the way."
He paused and looked at Arkady with a downcast and mistrustful face.
"Vasya, for goodness sake, don't follow me. Wait for me here. I will come back to you directly. Directly," said Arkady Ivanovich, losing his head and snatching up his cap to run for a doctor.
Vasya sat down at once. He was quiet and docile, but there was a gleam of some desperate resolution in his eye. Arkady turned back, snatched up from the table an open penknife, looked at the poor fellow for the last time, and ran out of the flat. It was 8 o'clock. It had been broad daylight for some time in the room. He found no one. He was running about for a full hour. All the doctors whose addresses he had got from the house porter when he inquired of the latter whether there were no doctor living in the building had gone out, either to their work or on their private affairs. There was one who saw patients. This one questioned at length and in detail the servant who announced that Nifedivitch had called, asking him who it was, from whom he came, what was the matter, and concluded by saying that he could not go, that he had a great deal to do, and that patients of that kind ought to be taken to a hospital. Then Arkady, exhausted, agitated, and utterly taken aback by this turn of affairs, cursed all the doctors on earth, and rushed home in the utmost alarm about Vasya. He ran into the flat. Mavra, as though there were nothing the matter, went on scrubbing the floor, breaking up wood, and preparing to light the stove. He went into the room. There was no trace of Vasya. He had gone out.
"Which way? Where? Where will the poor fellow be off to?" thought Arkady, frozen with terror.
He began questioning Mavra. She knew nothing, had neither seen nor heard him go out, God bless him. Nifedivitch rushed off to the Artemyevs. It occurred to him for some reason that he must be there. It was 10 o'clock by the time he arrived. They did not expect him, knew nothing and had heard nothing. He stood before them, frightened, distressed, and asked where was Vasya. The mother's legs gave way under her. She sank back on the sofa. Lizanka, trembling with alarm, began asking what had happened. What could he say? Arkady Ivanovich got out of it as best he could.
invented some tale which, of course, was not believed, and fled, leaving them distressed and anxious. He flew to his department, that he might not be too late there, and he let them know that steps might be taken at once. On the way, it occurred to him that Vasya would be at Yulian Mastakovich's. That was more likely than anything. Arkady had thought of that first of all, even before the Artemyevs. As he drove by His Excellency's door, he thought of stopping, but at once told the driver to go straight on. He made his mind up to try and find out whether anything had happened at the office, and if he were not there, to go to His Excellency, ostensibly to report on Vasya. Someone must be informed of it. As soon as he got into the waiting room, he was surrounded by fellow clerks, for the most part young men of his own standing in the service. With one voice, they began asking him what had happened to Vasya. At the same time, they all told him that Vasya had gone out of his mind and thought that he was to be sent for a soldier as a punishment for having neglected his work. Arkady Ivanovich, answering them in all directions, or rather avoiding giving a direct answer to anyone, rushed into the inner room. On the way, he learned that Vasya was in Yulian Mastakovich's private room, that everyone had been there, and that Esper Ivanovich had gone in there too. He was stopped on the way. One of the senior clerks asked him who he was and what he wanted. Without distinguishing the person, he said something about Vasya and went straight into the room. He heard Yulian Mastakovich's voice from within. "Where are you going?" someone asked him at the very door. Arkady Ivanovich was almost in despair. He was on the point of turning back, but through the open door he saw his poor Vasya. He pushed the door and squeezed his way into the room. Everyone seemed to be in confusion and perplexity, because Yulian Mastakovich was apparently much chagrined. All the more important personages were standing about him talking and coming to no decision. At a little distance stood Vasya. Arkady's heart sank when he looked at him. Vasya was standing, pale, with his head up, stiffly erect, like a recruit before a new officer, with his feet together and his hands held rigidly at his sides. He was looking Yulian Mastakovich straight in the face. Arkady was noticed at once, and someone knew that they lodged together, mentioned the fact to His Excellency. Arkady was led up to him. He tried to make some answer to the questions put to him, glanced at Yulian Mastakovich, and seeing on his face a look of genuine compassion, began trembling and sobbing like a child. He did even more. He snatched His Excellency's hand and held it to his eyes, wetting it with his tears, so that Yulian Mastakovich was obliged to draw it hastily away, and waving it in the air, said, "Come, my dear fellow, come. I see you have a good heart." Arkady sobbed and turned an imploring look on everyone. It seemed to him that they were all brothers of his dear Vasya, that they were all worried and weeping about him. "How? How has it happened? How has it happened?" asked Yulian Mastakovich. "What has sent him out of his mind?"
"Gratitude," was all Arkady Ivanovich could articulate.
Everyone heard his answer with amazement, and it seemed strange and incredible to everyone that a man could go out of his mind from gratitude. Arkady explained as best he could.
"Good heavens, what a pity," said Yulian Mastakovich at last. "And the work entrusted to him was not important, and not urgent in the least. It was not worthwhile for a man to kill himself over it. Well, take him away."
At this point, Yulian Mastakovich turned to Arkady Ivanovich again and began questioning him once more.
"He begs," he said, pointing to Vasya, "that some girl should not be told of this. Who is she? His betrothed, I suppose."
Arkady began to explain. Meanwhile, Vasya seemed to be thinking of something,
as though he were straining his memory to the utmost to recall some important, necessary matter which was particularly wanted at this moment. From time to time he looked round with a distressed face, as though hoping someone would remind him of what he had forgotten. He fastened his eyes on Arkady. All of a sudden there was a gleam of hope in his eyes. He moved with the left leg forward, took three steps as smartly as he could, clicking with his right boot as soldiers do when they move forward at the call from their officer. Everyone was waiting to see what would happen.
"I have a physical defect, and am small and weak, and am not fit for military service, Your Excellency," he said abruptly.
At that, everyone in the room felt a pang at his heart, and firm as was Yulian Mastakovich's character, tears trickled from his eyes.
"Take him away," he said, with a wave of his hands.
"Present," said Vasha in an undertone. He wheeled round to the left and marched out of the room.
All who were interested in his fate followed him out. Arkady pushed his way out behind the others. They made Vasha sit down in the waiting room till the carriage came, which had been ordered to take him to the hospital. He sat down in silence and seemed in great anxiety. He nodded to anyone he recognized, as though saying goodbye. He looked round towards the door every minute and prepared himself to set off when he should be told it was time. People crowded in a close circle round him. They were all shaking their heads and lamenting. Many of them were much impressed by his story, which had suddenly become known. Some discussed his illness, while others expressed their pity and high opinion of Vasha, saying that he was such a quiet, modest young man, that he had been so promising. People described what efforts he had made to learn, how eager he was for knowledge, how he had worked to educate himself. "He had risen by his own efforts from a humble position," someone observed. They spoke with emotion of His Excellency's affection for him. Some of them fell to explaining why Vasha was possessed by the idea that he was being sent for a soldier because he had not finished his work. They said that the poor fellow had so lately belonged to the class liable for military service and had only received his first grade through the good offices of Yulian Mastakovich, who had had the cleverness to discover his talent, his docility, and the rare mildness of his disposition. In fact, there was a great number of views and theories. A very short fellow clerk of Vasha's was conspicuous as being particularly distressed. He was not very young, probably about 30. He was pale as a sheet, trembling all over and smiling queerly, because any scandalous affair or terrible scene both frightens and at the same time somewhat rejoices the outside spectator. He kept running round the circle that surrounded Vasha, and, as he was so short, stood on tiptoe and caught at the button of everyone, that is, of those with whom he felt entitled to take such a liberty, and kept saying that he knew how it had all happened, that it was not so simple, but a very important matter, that it couldn't be left without further inquiry, then stood on tiptoe again, whispered in someone's ear, nodded his head again two or three times, and ran round again. At last, everything was over. The porter made his appearance, and an attendant from the hospital went up to Vasha and told him it was time to start. Vasha jumped up in a flutter and went with them, looking about him. He was looking for someone.
"Vasha! Vasha!" cried
Arkady Ivanovich, sobbing. Vasha stopped, and Arkady squeezed his way up to him. They flung themselves into each other's arms in a last, bitter embrace. It was sad to see them. What monstrous calamity was wringing the tears from their eyes? What were they weeping for? What was their trouble? Why did they not understand one another?
"Here, here, take it, take care of it," said Shumkov, thrusting a paper of some kind into Arkady's hand. "They will take it away from me. Bring it me later on. Bring it. Take care of it.
Vasha could not finish. They called to him. He ran hurriedly downstairs, nodding to everyone, saying goodbye to everyone. There was despair in his face. At last, he was put in the carriage and taken away. Arkady made haste to open the paper. It was Liza's curl of black hair, from which Vasha had never parted. Hot tears gushed from Arkady's eyes. Oh, poor Liza. When office hours were over, he went to the Artemyevs. There is no need to describe what happened there. Even Petya, little Petya, though he could not quite understand what had happened to dear Vasha, went into a corner, hid his face in his little hands, and sobbed in the fullness of his childish heart. It was quite dusk when Arkady returned home. When he reached the Neva, he stood still for a minute and turned a keen glance up the river into the smoky, frozen thickness of the distance, which was suddenly flushed crimson with the last purple and blood-red glow of sunset, still smouldering on the misty horizon. Night lay over the city, and the wide plain of the Neva, swollen with frozen snow, was shining in the last gleams of the sun with myriads of sparks of gleaming hoarfrost. There was a frost of 20 degrees. A cloud of frozen steam hung about the overdriven horses and the hurrying people. The condensed atmosphere quivered at the slightest sound, and from all the roofs on both sides of the river, columns of smoke rose up like giants and floated across the cold sky, intertwining and untwining as they went, so that it seemed new buildings were rising up above the old. A new town was taking shape in the air. It seemed as if all that world, with all its inhabitants, strong and weak, with all their habitations, the refuges of the poor, or the gilded palaces for the comfort of the powerful of this world, was at that twilight hour like a fantastic vision of fairyland, like a dream which, in its turn, would vanish and pass away like vapour into the dark blue sky. A strange thought came to poor Vasha's forlorn friend. He started, and his heart seemed at that instant flooded with a hot rush of blood, kindled by a powerful, overwhelming sensation he had never known before. He seemed only now to understand all the trouble, and to know why his poor Vasha had gone out of his mind, unable to bear his happiness. His lips twitched, his eyes lighted up, he turned pale, and, as it were, had a clear vision into something new. He became gloomy and depressed, and lost all his gaiety. His old lodging grew hateful to him. He took a new room. He did not care to visit the Artemyevs, and indeed he could not. 2 years later he met Lizanka in a church. She was by then married. Beside her walked a wet nurse with a tiny baby. They greeted each other, and for a long time avoided all mention of the past. Liza said that, thank God, she was happy, that she was not badly off, that her husband was a kind man and that she was fond of him. But suddenly, in the middle of a sentence, her eyes filled with tears, her voice failed. She turned away and bowed down to the church pavement to hide her grief.